You're listening to What the Dev, the weekly podcast of SD Times. And now, here's Jacob Lukowitz, online and social media editor at SD Times.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast episode. Today, we'll be talking about the evolution of database tech. With me today is Adam Prout, co-founder and CTO behind SingleStore, previously known as MemSQL. Welcome, Adam, and thanks for joining me.
Hey, happy to be here.
Great. So to get started, can you tell me a bit about SingleStore and its journey to introduce simplicity in data engineering?
Yeah. So at a 1,000-foot view, SingleStore is a distributed SQL database. So it speaks SQL, it's MySQL wire compatible, so you can plug in your MySQL drivers and speaks MySQL. But at a more detailed level, SingleStore takes a little bit of a different stance or a different take on databases than almost all databases that have come out in the last, say, 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. I think the best way to maybe demonstrate this is to introduce something called dbengines.com. It's just a website that ranks database engines. And then why this is interesting is because this website now ranks 350 different database engines. And this thing goes out on the web and looks at Twitter and LinkedIn and says, here's how popular this database is based on, you know, how many people are mentioning it. 350. That is way too many different databases. So yeah. Most recent databases tend to pick a very narrow niche and say, that is what we're going to do. We're going to do full text. We're going to do graph. We're going to do key value. We're going to do document. We're going to do even vector database, which is a very recently started to come out. Where SingleStore takes a different view. We're saying, yes, there are databases where specialization can give you value, but there's also a lot of value to having a general purpose flexible database that can run a broad set of workloads with performance often superior to specialized databases. So it's more about being general purpose, and that general purposeness actually drives simplicity because not every app fits into the box specified by one of these specialized systems. So you often see these architecture diagrams. So I have, you know, full text database over here. I have a caching database here. I have a analytics database here, and I have a flow that's shifting the data around. It's all for one app, right? That brings a lot of complexity into the app development process and also the maintenance process, keeping all those different systems online and in sync. Whereas if you shift to SingleStore, we're saying, hey, you have one database, and maybe pieces of that database are in full text, maybe pieces of that database are in JSON, but you're only running one database. You're only learning one database, one query language, and you're not having to shift the data all over the place. You know, AWS is very famous for this, right? Built to purpose, we'll sell you 25 different database services. We don't care how inefficient that is if you're moving the database everywhere. And so we're kind of the direct opposite to that take by AWS saying, hey, you don't need 350 unique databases. Sure, there's value in specialization, but you know, a lot of workloads can be run on one flexible enough database. So that's kind of our unique take on databases.
Okay, cool. And I know that there was the name change happened around 2020. Does that sort of coexist with moving more towards, you know, having a unified solution?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So let me just maybe step back 10 years and it'll make more sense. So
okay.
10 years ago, we were called MemSQL. And the original vision 10 years ago, remember 10 years was a much different place. Back then there was basically no distributed SQL database. It was all NoSQL. And the NoSQL folks, you know, Mongo, you know, Redis, Memcache, all these guys were saying, hey, SQL databases will never scale. You need to go to NoSQL. And they were really NoSQL. SQL today is basically SQL. Our take was at the time saying, no, we think you can make SQL databases scale. Obviously, lots of people have that take today. It's not too controversial, but 10 years ago, it's a little different. And we said, we're also going to bet on modern hardware, which 10 years ago was much, much bigger memories. And if you built a SQL database to take advantage of that, you could drive much higher level performance. And so that's when we came up with the name MemSQL. Maybe a year into that journey, we realized, and we were targeting web developers, but it was still a simplicity vision because we were saying you could stick with your SQL database because a lot of people at that time would start with MySQL and then hit scaling problems. And when you couldn't scale beyond one machine, you would switch to Mongo, you would switch to Memcache, mm-hmm. you would bring that complexity into your stack. We were saying, no, you just stick with MemSQL. But the problem with what our strategy at that point is, this the stack, this is kind of the LAMP stack era, or the end of it, they are all open source and they didn't want to pay much. But the people that did want to pay were ones that were saying, hey, I have this application that I'm trying to build. It has a bit of an analytical piece to it, and it has a bit of an operational piece to it. And if I try to run it on a data warehouse, it doesn't work very well because those aren't designed for apps. They're not designed to stay online. And if I run it on like my MySQL or my Postgres, it can't run analytical queries. It's too slow. And so there's something in the middle that's missing there. And this eventually would be called real-time analytics. I think it's fairly well known now. Lots of systems try to target this middle ground where like your data warehouse can't quite do the workload, your operational database can't quite do the workload. And so we very quickly shifted to that. But we didn't want to change the company name. I think there was like a nostalgia or whatever, like it's a big pain to change the company name. So we actually stuck with the MemSQL name, even though we pretty, maybe a year, year and a half in, we shifted towards this vision of building a more general purpose system. But we stuck with the name until about 2020 when we finally realized, okay, now it's time to change the name to something that more reflects what the company actually does. So we're not constantly asking this question of, are you an in-memory database, which we by far we're not. Like, we still have in-memory capabilities. It's again, part of what we offer, right, as a single store, but it's not the only thing we offer, which the MemSQL name kind of makes people believe. So we kind of shifted the name to single store, trying to say, hey, we can capture a wide swath of workloads. And in fact, now I think the name often has the opposite problem where people think we're saying we can capture all workloads, which we're not saying that. Yes, single store, we're not saying it's the only store that you need. It's the one that can do much more than your typical, you know, SQL database that's being released these days.
Mm-hmm. Great, yeah. And you mentioned real-time analytics. Is that still like a fairly new phenomenon that's added into databases, or is that kind of where a lot of innovation's happening?
So I think today, real-time analytics is kind of finally been acknowledged as it's a separate use case from just your classic data warehouse analytics. When we were doing it, you know, with Zynga 8 or 9 years ago, which was our first big real-time analytics customer, pre-IPO Zynga, it wasn't acknowledged as a separate thing. That's why people were struggling to figure out which system to use. But today, like if you look at most ecosystem diagrams of databases, you'll typically see a data warehouse piece, and you'll typically see something. The name might not be real-time analytics; it might be, you know, something slightly different with analytics in the name, operational analytics sometimes, but you'll see another box there. So I think the market is agreeing that is a separate use case. I think that the data warehouses will probably tell you that it's not, that they want that use case too, but you know, the reality is they don't quite have the features. So I think it's a fairly maturing kind of use case. Now, I don't know long term whether that box will stay by itself. I think potentially other systems will be able to do real-time analytics, but right now I think the market is realizing, hey, there's a set of databases that can target that workload, and they're different than, you know, your Redshift, your BigQuery.
Mm-hmm. Great. So kind of in the database field, what are you seeing are some of the common challenges that organizations are having? You know, now that we consider data as the new gold, and you have data streaming and multiple sources coming in at once, what are you seeing are some things that people still struggle with?
I think that the actual most interesting thing that's happening, even though again this is an older phenomenon in some sense, this move to cloud, and I think everyone has kind of agreed now, move to cloud is real. Like if you look at all the database startups, they'll do open source, like they say in the last 5 years even, they'll do open source for their on-premises. They won't even try to sell it to big enterprises, a lot of them, and then they'll monetize via cloud service. The struggle that this causes is that like Amazon is actually kind of expensive. Like you'll see all these blog posts out there, right, saying, hey, I moved off all Amazon services, I moved off all Google services, I saved all this money. And I think there's a gap that's forming there because I think the best way to think of it is there's a bunch of capabilities you get from the cloud, right? You get regions all over the world, you get elastic compute, you get elastic storage, you can build multi-tenancy into your service. There's like a whole bunch of these capabilities, but very few databases out there really take great advantage of all of them. right? There's a few that are really good at one or two of these cloud capabilities, but when you're running in the cloud and you're running on AWS, you're kind of paying for them all. Like if you're not using, say, S3 as part of your database, right? But you're still paying for a very high bandwidth pipe to S3, you're just not using it. So I think that's the most interesting thing that's kind of going on, is this conflict between on-prem and cloud as far as the cost and usability. And I think there's a big race on that it's weird to say it, because cloud databases are maybe 10 years old now, to really have cloud databases really, really take advantage of cloud infrastructure, like really take advantage of elastic compute. Like, for example, like databases have all kinds of background processes, right? That are happening in the background, the user doesn't care about them, but very few databases will use cheaper compute for those background processes in the cloud. You can use spot instances or different instance types, right? Optimized for those processes. So like, we're just kind of scratching the edge of, I think, what is possible in the cloud. And again, our take, of course, is general purpose, right? So like, if you want to build a general purpose database and you want to take advantage of all these capabilities of the cloud, that is how you will really get value from the cloud, because you're not you're not leaving value on the table. For example, when you're using Spanner, right, it's great. You've got regions all over the world. It's beautiful. It takes advantage of the cross-regionality of the cloud. It doesn't really take advantage super well of separation of storage compute. You're kind of leaving that piece on the table. It's not super elastic. So you're kind of leaving that piece on the table, but you get the cross-regionality. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like there's databases that do bits and pieces of it. I don't think there's a database that really tries to say, like, can we take advantage of all these capabilities of the cloud in a way that customers are getting value? Yes, you pay more, but you're also getting a lot more, like stuff you can't get in your own data center. So I think that's the most interesting thing that's kind of happening right now.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what are you seeing for the space of databases moving forward?
So I think there's the bit about going to the cloud. There's also the small thing going on, with the chatbots and AI and large language models and what that's going to do to databases. And so there's that just plays into this piece about user experience in databases, which I think you can use AI for it. You can also use other approaches. But databases tend to be this magic thing. Like, you write a SQL query and database just implements it and it's fast for you. But that to build an entire app, though, is still kind of complex for most systems, right? Especially if it's an app. Like, if for analytics, maybe it's a little easier these days, but for an app, you have to figure out your table schema. You have to figure out, you know, how you're going to update the data, how you're going to delete the data, you know, what types of indexing you need to drive in the performance, what kind of emission control you might need. And so there's a big piece there that's also starting to be invested in, to realize, hey, like, if we really invest, we can make the user experience of these databases a lot better for developers. I think it's the open source that's really pushing this, and it's going to push it's pushing it everywhere, right? When you get competition from open source, you know, everyone reacts to it. But really trying to drive in user experience, ease of use in databases, I think is something that's was in the past just kind of good enough, right? No one's going to say a terrible user experience, but I don't think companies were investing heavily to try to do that. And that's a big deal, of course, because you want the databases to be used, like you want the end customer wants an app typically, but the faster they can get that app, the more they tend to consume of your database, because they'll build more apps. So you want to have really sophisticated, if they need really sophisticated engineering teams and sophisticated operations, you know, build and run an app, that kind of limits the size of the market in some sense. So I think this usability is hopefully drives it home, so that, like, maybe to the point that you barely even know SQL and you can maybe build simple apps. There's the SQL developer, which is still developer, and then there's kind of the hardcore app developer, you know, Python, JavaScript. But I think there's another layer on top of that, even that can you build an app without even really knowing SQL? So I think that's something that's going to start to happen. And will probably increase the size of the market again for databases. Like, every time some new innovation happens, usually it increases the size of the market for databases. So if the cloud happened more. So,
So I was wondering what your take is on, like, what could kind of immediately be done to help with some of the usability? What's some of those like the biggest gateway?
So I think a lot of it is being able to figure out the requirements that the customers have kind of for them. And like you see some systems trying to do that. Oh, we'll learn the requirements of your app. We'll add indexes to your app, or we'll try to optimize your queries. And to some extent, managed services enable this, because if you're running, say you're running inside of a service, the service can watch what you're up to, like whether you know, that's kind of what you sign up for when you're running in the service. It can see the types of data you're putting in the system. It can see the types of queries you're running, and it can try to optimize the app a little bit for you. And so every database is a set of tuning knobs, right? It's like if you're Oracle, you have a bajillion tuning knobs. If you're SQL Server, you maybe have 1,000, but you really want to drive down the number of knobs the customer wants to tune. That's your end goal. Tuning those knobs is kind of an AI-ish problem. And you don't have to necessarily use fancy AI for it. You can call it statistics before it was fancy AI. But I think there are definitely innovations to happen in reducing the number of things that even know about and have the system much better at reacting and still giving good performance. Like obviously, if you really know your app, like you can probably tune your way to a little better performance, but like getting good enough performance with almost no tuning, I think is a difficult challenge. And there's some startups trying to tackle this too, but I think the database companies are going to continue to heavily invest in this. Like, can we drive this down, drive down the learning curve to get an app up and running?
Mm-hmm. I see. All right. Well, thank you so much for your insight. Is there anything else important that I haven't asked about that is important in the database field?
I think there is one more thing, and this is about JSON and JSON analytics. So as we said earlier, when I talked about single stores, we said, hey, we want to run a broad swath of workloads. So that extends beyond SQL. So that extends to both like search. It also extends to JSON. And if you look at what typical SQL databases do with JSON is they augment their SQL language to try to let you extract some structure from JSON columns, and it's okay, right? Like I don't think anyone's out there saying, hey, this is a beautiful way to do it, but it works. And then you look at what Mongo has brought to the table with JSON, right, where they've basically made it the de facto standard for writing a web app, and they have a really nice API to say, hey, this is how you interact with JSON. SQL databases haven't really taken that ease of use and usability jump with JSON, and even on top of that, when you throw in analytics, it's even a bigger gap, right? So like if you want to run some analysis and figure out, like scan a bunch of JSON documents, extract a particular attribute and do some analysis on it with some min, max, et cetera, count distinct, it's pretty slow, right? Like different systems have tried to analyze it slow compared to extracting that structure and putting it into a SQL database, right? Like that's very fast. If you want to keep it in JSON and do the analytics, it's pretty slow. So I think there's a bit of a gap there in JSON analytics too that we're pretty excited about, because one, it's the usability is not good, and two, the performance is not good. You have this double. So there's a bit of a market opportunity there that we've started to execute on with some of our recent releases, and we're gonna have some interesting news later this year with even more stuff. So we're pretty excited that again we can extend the range of what's possible with a SQL database. If you just want to run analytics over JSON, it shouldn't be slow and it shouldn't be painful. Right? It should be get as close to Mongo as we could, where it's like it's very natural. It's a piece of the database. So like there's this gap there for JSON analytics that we're excited about trying to fill that gap. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
Great. Yeah. So the last point is for our listeners, where would be a good place to learn more?
Singlestore.com. We have a blog there where we're engineering blog. We're talking about a lot of these details about what the recent releases, what we're doing with JSON. Also, what we're doing, the kind of the earlier stuff. We're talking about the cloud capabilities. That's a big point of emphasis for us. Mm-hmm. Is how can we continue to take advantage of cloud capabilities and see some interesting stuff. Workspaces, just separate storage compute, elastic compute, some neat stuff happening there.
All right, exciting stuff. Well, looks like that's all the time we have for today's show, and I want to thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Yeah, and thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in today. Be sure to check out all of our weekly episodes on your favorite podcast listening platform. Till next time, this has been What the Dev.